Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Diversity Rules Magazine on the air, celebrating the diversity of our humanity. Over the next hour, you will experience an uplifting adventure and discussion of issues of diversity and spiritual destiny. The show will prod you to think outside the realm of what is normal and conventional. You may also hear some things that will rile the soul, but just sit back, relax, and take in what you want and leave the rest. All we ask is that you think and think for yourselves. Your host, Jim Corey, the editor-publisher of Diversity Rules Magazine, awaits your arrival.
Good evening, and welcome to Diversity Rules Magazine on the air, celebrating the diversity of our humanity. I am Jim Corey, your host, and the editor-publisher of Diversity Rules Magazine. It's a niche publication based in upstate New York. Diversity Rules Magazine on the air is an extension of that print publication. We'll be discussing issues of the day in an informal, at-the-kitchen-table format. No one is right on this show. It is simply an airing of ideas and perspectives. As Aristotle said, it is the mark of an educated mind to entertain a thought without accepting it. While you may hear some things you will disagree with, all I ask is that you think about what you heard and think for yourselves. So let's get into the show here. Tonight's guest is David Clark. He's the author and He's the author of Different Strokes for Different Folks and radio show host, and he is a retired social worker, a recovering alcoholic, and a recovering sex addict. He has poured his years of intense experiences into his third novel, Shades of Gay. His first two novels were written under the pen name of Davis Ajourouie. I think I said that right. David's going to kill me here. They are The Misadventures of Sister Mary Olga Fortitude and Babes in Bucksnort. All of his novels have enjoyed rave reviews on Amazon.com. And David has found spirituality as a way to help fill the needs that could not be satisfied through his addictions. He is committed to spreading a message of hope to others, which is what his radio show is all about. He is socially minded, and he wrote Shades of Gay as a way to share the pain of addiction and hope of recovery. David's website is authordavidclark.com. And I have to say, David, this is his network that Diversity Rules Magazine on the Air is privy to be part of, and I am very happy to be part of his network. And so with that said, let's bring on David. Are you there, David?
I am, Jim.
How are you?
How are you tonight?
Great. I'm sorry I slaughtered that name.
You didn't do too bad. You did better
okay.
than Paula did. My own producer really botched it up. It's Davis Ajourdoui, and Ajourdoui means it means today in French. Oui, right.
Okay, yeah. Davis Today. Okay,
that's
cool.
Right.
How did you come up with that name?
Well, it really was just something that I pulled out of the hat years ago. It was a nickname that I gave myself to entertain my friends. And, you know, just like I pull names out of the hat for my Misadventures series, they're just inspired names. They just come to me. There's no rhyme or reason to them.
Sister Mary Olga Fortitude. That sounds like that song back in the 70s there. What was that? Remember that song?
No, I don't.
Sister Mary Oliphant, Elephant or something like that. I don't know. I digress
oh,
here.
That's okay. Yeah.
But anyway.
All I can think of from the 70s is Sister Sledge.
Yeah. So you have a show that is part of the network that you started, which I'm part of as well. So why don't you tell me about your show?
Well, as you said, it's called Different Strokes for Different Folks, and it's on three times a week. The best times to catch it on blogtalkradio.com are at 3:30 Thursday afternoons and Friday evening at 7:30. That's Eastern Time. And you would just go to blogtalkradio.com /author David Clark, which is where you would be listening to this show at this point in time. And you can always go to that at a later point in time and listen to it in the archives as one of three places where it will be archived. It is a spiritually themed show, and it basically explores the life journeys vis-a-vis spiritual experiences of my guests, and some of them have no spiritual beliefs, and some of them do have spiritual beliefs, and the systems will differ. I have a vast array of guests. I have ministers. I have people that are recovering from addictions. I have best-selling authors. I have a comedian. I have psychics. So I have songwriters and singers. So there's a real kaleidoscope of different guests that will come and share their life journeys.
Well, it sounds like you have a nice range of guests and perspectives, and I'm sure you hear things that people probably don't want to hear, but that's what we're all about, you know, differing opinions and diversity.
That's right. It is about diversity, and the common theme is that we're trying to find common ground between the guests and myself and the listeners. I ask the listeners to keep an open mind and see what they can relate to rather than to compare themselves and compare belief systems, so that we can find that thread that weaves through us all, which
sure.
is what makes us human.
And that's
connected.
What really makes the world go round, that common thread. And more of us need to link into that common thread, I think, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Finding common ground. I mean, so many people want to find differences and exploit those differences and create division and all that kind of stuff. I think we need to get back to just getting along with each other.
Right. It's all about being united. We're all in it together.
Yeah.
And, you know, so many people choose to ignore that reality and lead isolated existences whereby they miss out on the diversity of human experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we can come together, we can experience mutual joy.
Great. Now, why'd you call it Different Strokes for Different Folks? That's a different name.
Well, because they're different folks and they all have differing belief systems, so that's why.
Yeah. Well, that's right. Yeah, we already just so people heard that.
Right.
So, who are your guests coming up? I know in the past you've had some pretty exciting guests.
Oh, I had a great show Friday night that's in the archives. It's with a best-selling gay author by the name of Brian McNaught, and he's written several watershed books that are now being used as college textbooks. His first book was called On Being Gay, which is a very affirming book for gay people and an eye-opener for people that want to know a little bit about the gay experience. Brian is an Irish Catholic who has moved on in his belief systems. He's divorced himself from Catholicism. And
haven't we all?
I can only speak for myself.
Our enlightened counterparts, yeah.
Right, right. Anyhow, that's a real interesting show people can find. Tomorrow I have on a really exciting psychic, an author by the name of Mary Blake, and she does something called multi-life therapy, where she takes her clients and regresses them into the lives in which they need healing. And she's written a book called Journals of the Healer, and she has been able to induce every single one of her clients into an altered state where they're able to connect with other lives. And
that's awesome.
And induce healing in this life from whatever was unhealed in previous lives. So I'm looking forward to trying that out myself.
I'll have to listen to that.
That's going to be tomorrow.
This past life regression, and it's very interesting what comes to your mind, you know. When
I've never done it.
Influence. Really? You should. It's an amazing experience because you're there, you're in this trance, and images come into your head, and you see visions of things that are coming from your subconscious. It's rather an incredible thing. You should definitely do it.
I'm going to. The other show I wanted to point out, I have a two-parter this Friday night, the 31st, and again the following Friday night, which I believe is February 7th. I have on another best-selling author by the name of John J. McNeil. And John was a prisoner of war in the Nazi prison camps of World War II, and he became a Jesuit after that in the 50s.
Wow.
And he was one of a pioneering gay activist priests. He came out in the 60s when that was very unfashionable, and he wrote a best-selling book, another watershed book, called The Church and the Homosexual. And he was later called on the carpet about that book and his work in gay activism, and he was silenced. He kept up his silence for a number of years, being obedient to Rome, until AIDS came along and he saw the persecution that was going on amongst gay people, and he couldn't remain silent any longer. And when he spoke out, he was expelled from the Jesuits. So that was a very sad point in his life.
Yeah,
but he went on to do a lot of rewarding work with gay people. He became a psychotherapist, and he's 88 years old now. He's got an incredible story. There's been a movie made of his life called Taking a Chance on God, and I'm interviewing the director of that film sometime in February.
So
those are a couple of the guests. Well, a lot of them are people that I've known who have interesting stories to tell. And one person kind of leads to another. I just have been networking, and Brian McNaught is opening some doors for me. John has offered to do that. It's my goal to try to have on two prominent guests a month, but most of my guests are just common folk with a story to tell. And some of them have very compelling stories. In fact, all of them so far have.
Well, maybe we can cross guest.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. I'd be glad to trade. Yep.
Definitely.
I think that Brian McNaught would be a really good guest for your show, and I think John would be too.
He'd be a good one to feature in an issue of Diversity Rules, I think. So I may have to
hit
up on his name and contact info.
I will. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, Kate Clinton is coming up. She's
going to
be on, I think February 27th. She's a very famous lesbian comedian. Yeah, she's great.
Yeah. I had her in an issue when I was doing just the digital, and it was fun talking to her on the phone. It was great. Yeah. Okay, so this leads into the next question I had in mind here. You were talking about being an author, and you're a retired social worker. So tell us how you happened to become a radio show host in between all that.
Well, the author came first. I've got my dog in the background for people that can hear him and her, so I'm just going to close the door here.
Too.
Yeah. No, the author part came first.
Well, we are at the kitchen table talking, so it makes sense to have dogs barking in the background.
Right, right. Adds a little bit of local flavor to the interview. When I retired, I decided to write my autobiography, which was about recovery from sexual addiction, alcoholism, and mental illness. And it had been my intention to publish that, but I got cold feet because it was very intimate and it involved stories of people that I had been in relationships with, and I also had relapse in my sexual addiction, and so I felt a little less than confident about putting out a message of hope, which is definitely there, even for somebody that's relapsing, but I wanted to wait until a point in time when I had more long-lasting sobriety. But it was a cathartic book for me. I really exercised a lot of demons. And when I finished writing that book, I thought, what am I going to do now? Because I really enjoyed the experience of writing. And I remembered these characters that I'd developed to entertain a coworker of mine when I'd been a social worker. And there was Sister Mary Olga Fortitude, who's a bourbon-swilling, chain-smoking nun. And her,
That's so awesome. Yeah.
She teaches classes in advanced holiness. The Reverend Mother is a reformed prostitute. The convent chef is a gay cowboy. And all of my characters
going to hell, man.
I know. And I think hell will be a cool place. At least the hell I'm going to.
I'll see you there.
At any rate, all the characters are deliciously dysfunctional. They all have crazy names. And I used to call up my coworker and leave messages on her voicemail in which I would just spontaneously spin stories and do impressions of the various characters, and she loved them. So I thought to myself, I bet I could write a book about them. And I sat down and I wrote The Misadventures of Sister Mary Olga Fortitude in a little over a month, hadn't run out of ideas, and I'm now working on book number 14. And
oh, my
God. Second book,
I've been
very prolific.
That's
I've actually
you wrote
written,
your first book in a month.
I did, yep.
Holy cow. There's hope for me then.
It only takes me 1 to 6 months to write a book. It depends on the subject matter. I've written a total of 20 books since 2006. So
I knew you wrote books. I didn't realize you wrote that many.
Yeah, I write at least two a year. Yeah.
Wow.
So the way I became a radio show host was related to the books. I had done a number of interviews on the Sister Mary Olga books, and one of them had been with a program called Spiritually Raw on the Spiritually Raw Broadcasting Network. And I came back to them when I had written Shades of Gay and asked for an interview, and I was told they were not doing their show anymore, but that they had a radio network, that they promoted authors, would I like help, and what's your book about, what's your background, and I told them all about it, and they said, we think that you have the material to do your own show. So I said, really? And it just went from there. I listened to what he had to say, and he was very encouraging, A.J. Mata. And so I signed on to do a radio show, and one show has led to three shows. I also have a show on Monday at 11 a.m.
Well, you're just a talk show crazy guy, aren't you?
I'm a talk show junkie.
I love it. Huh.
Yeah, it's great. I love every minute of it. It's a whole new horizon for me.
Well, this is new for me, too, and I'm very excited about it. I've always wanted to do this, and I'm just thrilled that I can be part of your network to do this.
Well, I'm awfully glad that you signed on, Jim. I think that you're going to be a big success. You've got passion. Yeah, you've got a passion, and you've got a message, and I think that's all it takes.
Yeah, I think so. Well, that's all really people need is a message and passion to get that message out. People think it's a lot harder than that, but, you know, it's frustrating when people don't seem to be listening, but they are, you know. So
and
speaking
I think,
of the network, why don't you tell us about the network? You know, what it'll be about? You know, how can people get in touch with you if they want to be on the network or if they want to sponsor your show?
Well,
the networking show.
The network is called Free Spirit Broadcasting. And it is an alternative network that will explore topics like spirituality, lifestyle, alternative lifestyles, the gay, lesbian, transgendered, queer experience, bisexual, GLBTQ experience. Don't want to leave anybody out. There's going to be a show that's hosted by Beth Miller, who's a vegan and who's an ardent student of Carl Jung. and a poet, and she's going to have on a variety of guests on a show called It's Your Turn to Speak. Mary Blake, who I told you about, who is going to be a guest on my show tomorrow, is going to come onto the network with her show, which is entitled the same as her book, Journals of a Healer. And she has very interesting guests. There are a number of hosts from Spiritually Raw Broadcasting that are going to appear on both networks, and a lot of them come from diverse backgrounds. And so it's primarily a lifestyle theme, culture, subculture.
Cool.
I've got a house beautiful designer who's going to probably have a show. So it's basically lifestyle and spirituality is what the network's
awesome.
About. And if they want to get in touch with me, all they would have to do is go to freespiritbroadcasting.com and click on my picture, David Clark, Different Strokes for Different Folks.
Handsome picture, by the way, too.
Thanks. Yours, too. You little devil. And
we're going to throw in some ad libs here, you know?
You got to do it. Yeah, got to live it up. So just click on that picture, and there is a way to contact us. There's a form that you fill in. And so that's the best way to get in touch. And certainly if you want to sponsor Jim, his show has already had a lot of hits. Even though this is the first episode, he's had nearly 300 people exploring his show prior to it being aired.
It
is incredible. So there's a lot of interest in Diversity Rules Magazine on the air. And contact Jim. He certainly could use a sponsor. And the network would be willing to have a sponsor. And likewise, I am soliciting sponsors for my show.
Yeah. Well, that's what it's all about, you know, getting the word out about our own passion and mission and other people's passion and mission. And that's really one reason why I started the magazine, was to help others get their message out in a venue, in a format that, you know, other people weren't letting them express it in, you know. So I look for those people, and I'm sure you do too, that aren't famous yet, or, you know, I like to promote people that haven't arrived yet, you know. Then we can say I was part of that person's success, you know.
Yeah, that's such a cool feeling, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
So we touched on this already. You're an author. How did you become an author? What propelled you to decide, okay, I'm going to write a book, or I'm going to start writing? I love writing, so I have an idea what your answer is going to be, but let's explore that more.
I always loved to do it, and it was one of my favorite subjects in school. I never dreamed of being a writer. I had wanted to be an actor, and instead I took this journey, starting out as a salesperson, and then I became a social worker. And as a social worker, I had to write notes, and I was creative in my note-keeping. And the one thing that was good about writing case notes was that it forced me to be cogent and concise and to, you know, boil down scenarios to the nuts and bolts, if you will. And I think that when you're writing a story, that it's very important to capture the reader's attention and not get bogged down with a lot of erroneous detail. So I will say that my note-keeping over the years that I was a social worker was a definite asset. And as I said, the reason I decided to write my autobiography was I had read Rick Warren's book, The Purpose-Driven Life, right after I retired. And that book took its readers on a 40-day spiritual journey at the end of which they were supposed to have their life's purpose revealed to them. Well, it came to me very clearly that what I needed to do was to write a book of hope and inspiration for others that may have walked through paths of darkness such as I had. So that was how I happened to start writing. And then I've already told you the rest of the story, how one book led to the other.
Isn't that great? You mentioned something, and I have to pick up on that. You know, your path of darkness, you're a light to get other people out of your path of darkness. Isn't that great when you think about it?
Well, it is. I belong to 12-step programs, and the 12th step is having had a spiritual awakening, or having seen the light, if you will. We try to carry this message to others who suffer and to practice the principles of the program in our lives.
Yeah.
So for me to come out, to come out as a gay person, and that took a lot of recovery too, because there was a lot of shame connected to being gay.
Sure.
And then there was the alcoholism piece, there was the sexual addiction piece, which was tied into years of devastating depressions and dark nights of the soul. So I have the story that does tell, having walked through the valley of the shadow of death, if you will, because I had attempted suicide at one point in my life during a very dark night of the soul. And I came out the other end, and I can see now that it was all a blessing in disguise, because now I'm able to help other people who share these challenges and who need inspiration, who need hope.
Well, you know, I have to admit to you that I didn't actually do it, but back in the 80s, in my late 20s, I had thought about it. It's a scary thought to have killing yourself go through your head, you know. And thank God I didn't do it. Obviously, I wasn't meant to, because I'm here talking to you, and it appears that other people are listening to me on my Facebook page. They've discovered we're live. I didn't tell anybody.
Cool.
I figured it was a test run, you know.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. All right, before we get into the next question, I want to run a little promo about your book. So sit tight.
Oh, thank you.
We'll be right back.
Prepare to be shocked. Prepare to be moved. Prepare to laugh. Prepare to cry. And prepare to be inspired. Dive into David Clark's latest book, Shades of Gay, and you will find yourself plunged into the trenches of sexual addiction. You will embark upon a kaleidoscopic tour from the abyss to higher ground. In the beginning, it was love at first sight when Daniel and Mark met, but through the years, that same love became tainted. Daniel, an alcoholic and sex addict, has found himself unable to resist the lure of other men. When Mark discovers his infidelity, he leaves Daniel, who begins a dark descent into sexual tryst after tryst. Shades of Gay reveals the myriad desires a lost man can permit his body and soul to revel in, despite the pain they bring. But can such fleeting moments of pleasure bring meaning to life? Will Daniel realize the love he had with Mark is worth more than the sweat spent in other men's beds?
Wow. Just that description gets me hot, man.
Well, I'll tell you, the book will get you hot.
I've read some of it. It does. Yeah, the first chapter is like, whoa, baby.
Yeah, it gets down and dirty pretty fast.
Yeah.
Right in the first page.
We've already got an idea of what it's about, but in case that promo missed something, why don't you tell us a little more about the book?
Okay, well, the book is a story that's very similar to my own. It is about this fellow, Daniel Connery, who has this journey that he's on that takes him through his own paths of darkness, through the trenches of sexual addiction, as the ad says. He doesn't realize that he's a sex addict until he meets the love of his life, Mark, and he pledges to be monogamous to Mark, but a couple of months into the relationship, he is dabbling again in the dirt, and he realizes that he's powerless to stop that behavior, that he needs more and more to get his high. And he also abuses alcohol to escape his problems, just as he uses sex to escape problems and uncomfortable feelings. And Daniel discovers that actually he doesn't need to put any substances into his body to get a high. Just cruising for sex, going into cruising places, gives him such a rush. And so he gets to a point in his life where his secret shame is revealed to Mark, and Mark basically gives him an ultimatum. And so Daniel comes to this crux in his life and needs to decide whether or not he's going to continue to pursue the cheap, shallow thrills of the moment or to find a better way for himself. So the story, it's billed as an erotic novel, and it is very explicit. It's not for the weak of heart. I have had a straight grandmother who's read the book, and she was able to deal with the explicit gay sex. And I paint the picture in this fashion because I want the readers to really get what sexual addiction is all about.
Yeah.
And for anybody that is sexually addicted, they're going to be able to relate to the book, and they may not even know that they have a problem until they read the book and see some of the things that Daniel has to deal with.
Yeah, I you know, I can understand this because back in my 20s, this is the first time I've even talked about this, and I'm talking about it on a freaking radio show. Oh, my God. But I was there, you know. I mean, I was a closeted little homo, and I'll tell you, I needed to get doing what I needed to do, and I couldn't be out about it, so I, you know, rest areas and tea rooms and whatever. I found them, you know, and I came close a couple times to getting caught, and it was very scary, you know, and it was sort of a wake-up call. And the thrill of it all, it was like the adrenaline of almost getting caught induced me to do it more, you know?
Right, right.
You understand that because you were there too, you know?
Oh, absolutely. There's definitely the undercurrent of excitement comes from the risks that you take, and the risk of being apprehended, as scary as that may seem, somehow there's something exciting about doing it in forbidden places.
I remember one night, oh my God, I can't believe I'm talking about this, but that's funny. I have nothing to hide. You know, I'm 53, who gives a shit, you know? We were at the rest area. I'm not going to say where. We're all sitting on the picnic table, and all of a sudden a cop car comes in, and we see it cruise through. Then all of a sudden it whips around. The lights are blaring, flashing. We all scatter. My heart was like, ended up hiding underneath an old dead tree in the woods, and I would like rip my shirt off because I had a white T-shirt on, you know, so I put it in my pants. And I stayed there for like a half hour until I knew they were gone. But then it was like the next night we were all out doing it again.
Of course.
And we were laughing about it. It's like, those fuckers didn't get us, you know? And it's like, oh, my God. Oops, I shouldn't have said that. I'm not sure if I can say that on the air. But
it's
anyway.
Internet. It's internet.
It's
you can
internet.
Say whatever you want. Yeah.
That's right.
The
anyway,
FCC
so
doesn't rule this yet.
Sex addiction. That's one of many.
Well, I was caught once. And
oh,
talk about having my heart in my throat. I was in a tea room, which for those of you who don't know what that is, it's a cruisy bathroom, and back in the day, there were a lot of them, and that was where gay men met to have sex. In fact, the first time I ever had sex with a man was in a tea room, and it felt down and dirty and disgusting, but it was also very exciting, and like a moth drawn to the flame, I kept returning there. But at any rate, I was in a tea room this one time having sex with somebody underneath the stall, And the door burst open, and it was a security guard of this department store.
Oh, Lord.
And, yeah, and he apprehended both of us and took us down to his office and was going to call the cops. Well, he played good guy, bad guy. He let the other guy go. I don't know why. And he was going to really put the screws to me. And for whatever reason, I just felt compelled to tell him the truth. I said, I'm a sex addict. And I said, I'm trying to recover from this. And he says, well, what are you doing here? I said, I don't know. I just went to a 12-step meeting for sexual addiction. And I understand it's the most natural thing in the world for a sex addict to want to act out. And the meeting was disturbing to me. And so I just went to my form of medication. And he let me off the hook. He made me sign an agreement that I would never come into that department store again. But I thought I was going to be arrested. I was really scared.
Yeah, it is. When you get close to that point of being actually arrested and exposed, it's like, oh, my God, you know.
Oh, I could have lost my job, you know, because there was a morality clause in my contract.
I may not have gotten my job if I had ever gotten arrested and you know, doing something like that. The job
right.
I don't have anymore. But yeah, it is. People don't realize what an addiction sex can be, because something inside of you just takes over. It's, you know, hormones, and it's just like you can't control it. It's incredible, the power of an addiction.
It's a progressive disease too. Now, a lot of people don't accept that it's a disease, but it's the same thing as alcoholism because of what happens in the brain, the chemistry that gets going. And as you go on, you need more and more stimulation in order to get the same highs. So what happens is that a lot of not yets are barriers that you cross over doing things. I've done things that I never would have dreamed I would have done years ago, and that theme progressed and happened over and over, where I would cross more lines and do even more unspeakable things. So, you know, it just takes more and more to get the same level of adrenaline going and get those endorphins going.
I found that you had to do one more level of exhilaration to get satisfied, or to, you know, it's like it got boring after a while and you had to do something different.
Right.
And you put yourself in a situation with more risk because it's exciting and at the same time very dangerous, but you don't give a shit.
Right, right.
Because your little head is talking and your big head is...
Right.
But you've already touched on this. Now, parallels between your life and the life of the main character, they obviously are very close.
They are close.
It is you in this book, pretty much, right?
Well, it isn't. It isn't. It's me from the standpoint that I used my own experience as a means to write this story. The character shares a lot of similar experiences that I've had. There are a lot of fictional experiences written into the book. I mean, I had a relationship with a man who I'd pledged to be monogamous to, like Daniel does in this book, and I was unable to remain faithful to him. And I came to a point in my life where I was given an ultimatum, too. So those are the parallels. The rest of it is fiction.
It's built-in fiction,
But the other thing that parallels my experience with that of the character is that I, like Daniel, go on to realize that there's hope at the end of the tunnel, and that it becomes a story of triumph and redemption. And I'm not going to give away the ending or tell you what happens to the relationship with his partner, Mark, but it does take the reader to higher ground, because there are going to be some people that are going to say this is just pornography. And it is pornographic at points, but that's not the thrust of the story. It's about this character's journey.
And, you know, talking about pornography and sex and like that, you know, we live in a society that's so hung up on sex and I'm so afraid to admit that men have penises and women have vaginas and boobs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just incredible. So I know your book is, you know, it's very sexually explicit. I have no issue with sexually explicit things because to me it's just a part of life. It is part of our biological nature. We fuck and we have fun, you know? And I, you know, and to me, having a book like this that isn't really pornographic, but it's telling a story of a person's experiences in a very sexual way because that is the essence of who they were, is not sexual pornography. It's telling a story that other people may need to hear.
Right.
And I think because our society is so hung up on nudity and sex and exposing things like this and being afraid to talk about it, it drives people like you and I to rest areas. Not anymore, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, it did. And I think
mm-hmm.
it's sad. It's a sad commentary on our society that we're so closed-minded and so conservative that we can't talk about the human body in a sexual way. What are your thoughts on that? I know that's a little
Well, I think that you're absolutely right on. I think that a lot of the behavior that happens in gay men, which a lot of people stereotype all gay men do, which is not true, is this inappropriate sexual behavior in public places. And I think that it was because of the repressive nature of society, the fact that gay people were basically driven underground, that they had to seek out secret places to meet other gay people, and develop codes of meeting people by different signals. It really was. It was motivated by the repressive society that we live in.
Exactly.
And the shame perpetuates.
My first time to Provincetown, you know, not knowing that there was a straight beach, a lesbian beach, a gay beach, and then a nude beach, I didn't realize that. So I went all the way down to the end and walked up the beach to the nude part of the gay nude beach, and I'm walking through this whole beach of naked women, and I swear it scared me. I said, I never saw so many vaginas in my life, and I'm like, oh, my God, people don't care. So I don't care either. You know, it's great.
Yeah.
I think people need to be more freeing and liberating like that, you know?
It is very liberating, and in that context, there's nothing sexual about it. It's just about
it's just,
human about
body
enjoying
and,
right.
Yeah. But, all right, so moving on, let's get away from sex here a little bit. We got
not
a little mired
much,
in that sex talk, didn't we?
Right, we did, yeah.
Recovery from alcohol, how is it different from recovery from a sexual addiction?
Oh, they're horses of two different colors. I mean, not to downplay the challenges of recovering from alcohol abuse and alcoholism, but it's a whole different thing to put down a substance that you don't need to live than it is to deal with something that can be life-enhancing. We all have sexualities, and those are not going to go away. We don't need to put alcohol into our bodies, and we can live without it. Sexual addiction, in a sense, is like a food addiction. You don't absolutely need to have sex to live, but it can be part of a happy and healthy life and enhance your life. And I believe it's a God-given gift that we have for pleasure and coming together with another person and becoming closer to that person, exploring intimacy on all different levels. Mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual. And that had always eluded me because I was just focused on the physical and I was focused on the high. So I was essentially scared of intimacy and didn't know what it was about.
Yeah.
But, you know, to try to reframe my sexual experience from the arenas that I've been in was all new ground, and I had to let go of euphoric recall or fantasy. I had to figure out for myself what is a happy and healthy sexuality for David. And, you know, it's not having sex in public places. It's not having anonymous encounters. It's not hooking up online through different chat sites. That's not what it's about. What I want is to experience a situation that I have experienced before with a primary person. And
yeah.
Right now I'm out of a relationship, so I'm not really ready to get into that kind of thing. And I'm trying to take time out for me to discover who I am and what it is I really want.
Well,
and I will say
thank
you. I've had some relapses along the line. It's been difficult, this path of total abstinence, but it's kind of like a timeout for me. And
yeah.
Recovery is not about abstinence. It's about searching for something that's enhancing your soul at all levels, be it sex or be it some of my passions like my radio show, my writing, all of those things that fill me up with a sense of purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sex is shallow. I mean, it's you're getting off and you get off and leave your mark and you're done, you know. And I think we all eventually want something more out of sex, not necessarily the sex. You want the relationship in a loving sexual fashion, you know. So it's something we all strive for, but we get caught up in this craziness sometimes and you can't get out of it, you know. So, gay sex addict and a straight one, there's probably not much difference, or is there?
No,
sex
there's not.
Sex.
It's just the different behaviors, really. And, you know, different sex addicts act out in different ways. For some people, it's just an addiction to pornography.
Yeah.
It's basically whatever the person uses to numb themselves out and to get that high to escape from whatever may be troubling them. And for me, a lot of the feelings that I try to medicate are, you know, anxiety is a huge trigger, boredom, loneliness, anger, fear,
yep.
Sadness. And likewise, if I'm feeling really on top of the world and high, you know, I feel like I need a reward, and then I turn to sex too. But it's basically about medicating feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we all need sex. Sex is sex. And, you know, you still do it. You still need it. And it's an animal urge. And when you can't have it in a loving relationship, you got to have it, you know? It is the way it is. So, yeah, there's very little difference between gay and straight sex. It's just who you're doing it with.
That's right.
Now, where would one go to get help for a sexual addiction? Where did you go?
Well, I went to a program called Sex Addicts Anonymous, which is SAA, and there are meetings all around the country. Not every area is going to have them. There are other 12-step programs also for sexual addiction. There's Sexual Compulsives Anonymous, which is big in New York City. That's SCA. There's Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. That's SLAA. And there is Sexaholics Anonymous. That's SA. And what I would suggest is that people just Google sexual addiction or put in those different programs, SAA, SLAA, SCA, or SA, and see what meetings might be in their area. And if there are no meetings, I can tell you that Sex Addicts Anonymous has telephone meetings and online meetings. So it's still possible to get help, even if you can't do it in person. And it's just about as effective. You know, the telephone meetings are really great.
Now, see, you're rattling off all these organizations. You know, I never realized that, I mean, when you think of addiction, you always think of alcohol, drugs. You don't think of sex. And to hear that there are these groups, and we're blazing a path tonight because there's probably going to be somebody listening to this out there that's like, holy shit, man, they're talking about me, you know? And that's the great thing about this, and that's the great thing about internet radio, and that's just the great thing about being able to talk freely about our experiences. And I would never have known that sexual addiction was such an issue.
Well, it is.
You know, before meeting you, I saw my own self, but I had no idea that there were other people experiencing the same thing to the degree that I was years and years ago.
Well, I think for you it was situational and episodic, but for a lot of people it becomes a lifelong burden, if you will. And statistics show that 8% of men and 6% of women have a sexual addiction in this country. And that's probably just the tip of the iceberg. Patrick Kearns, who's written several groundbreaking books on sexual addiction, has said that the Internet is going to be the tsunami, or is the tsunami, of sexual addiction because it's hooking more and more people in its clutches.
Yeah. I mean, you know, pornography, it's good and it's bad. I mean, it's like alcohol. You abuse it, you're going to have problems with it, you know. But you can't, you know, I a lot of times hear people persecuting pornography, and but it's like, you know, it is what someone makes it. You can't stereotype the evil of something because you think it's bad. You know, because there are good parts. I'm sure a lot of couples use pornography to get themselves primed up. And, you know, who are we to say that pornography and sexuality is bad for some other people? So
I think it's all
there's a degree that you go to where it becomes obsessive and unhealthy. You know?
I think it all depends on how it's used. And the one thing I had wanted to say when you talked about that one person that might be out there, this is a disease of isolation. And I thought I was the only one with this problem. I had no idea how many people are out there that are suffering from it, and the vast majority of them will never get help, you know, which is a sad thing.
They'll go on and on thinking it's just them and not think about it, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So you've already touched on your other books. Do you want to talk about any of your other books in particular that you've written that stand out other than the ones you've talked about already and your newest one, Shades of Gay?
Well, there really are just the three books that are published. The next book in the Sister Mary Olga series is going to be called Have a Heart, and that will come out sometime in the next year. I've been offered a contract on it. And I'm just waiting to see if I can get an agent to negotiate better terms for me. So
awesome.
You can be looking for that. And
your
I
world
do
is
have,
moving ahead.
It is.
Yeah.
Gratefully, I'm very happy to say that. There is an e-book out in Kindle form, which is a compendium of my life experiences. It's called Putting the Pieces Together, and that's also written under the pen name of Davis Ojerdwe, and that's a whopping 99 cents.
Wow.
So if you want to look at the different aspects of my life, the coming out experience, the alcoholism experience, being locked in the closet of shame and then bursting the doors open, my history of mental illness, my history of sexual addiction, all of that is in putting the pieces together. So that
have you written short stories? I've always that's my idea for a book. I want to write a book, an anthology of short stories based on my true life experiences, you know.
Do it.
Yeah, you know, I think short stories are great. They're a quick read. Have you ever done that? Have you ever written short stories?
In my past, but that's not something that I've been doing since I started writing books. No. And I'm not particularly drawn. Yeah, I'm not really drawn in that direction at this point in time.
Yeah.
But I would consider writing a novella, you know, a very short novel. Yeah.
Sure. So where can readers get your books? And how can they find out more about David Clark?
The best place
to... neat little things that we sort of exposed this evening.
The best place to go is Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. But Amazon has everything, including putting the pieces together. Now, you don't have to remember the pen name Davis Ojerdwe. If you can remember Sister Mary Olga Fortitude, that's probably going to bring up The Misadventures of Sister Mary Olga Fortitude. The other title is Babes and Bucksnort. Then if you look up Shades of Gay, be sure to put in my name too, because there are other books out with that same title. So it would be Shades of Gay by David Clark with an E. And if you want to find out more about me, you can go to authordavidclark.com, and there you can also see an entertaining video trailer for my book, Shades of Gay.
Cool. Awesome.
And then there are the archives of my radio shows, and those are at differentstrokes/srbroadcasting.com, and they'll also be on the freespiritbroadcasting.com in the future. They have not been uploaded onto that yet. And that's where Jim's shows are going to be. It's going to be freespiritbroadcasting.com. Just click on his picture, which says Diversity Rules Magazine on the Air, and that will list his archives, and you should be able to find this show if you want to listen to it again tomorrow or the next day. It will be on there.
Yep, great. Yeah, we definitely will. This has been a great show, and we're coming down to the two-minute warning, 2 minutes and 38 seconds left in this first debut test show of Diversity Rules Magazine on the Air. And I really want to thank you, David. You were great. I thank you for your candidness and your honesty, and I think we need more of that out
there. Well, it's my pleasure.
Yeah.
I hope the show touches somebody. I hope it inspires somebody.
If nothing else, you're going to say, boy, that Jim Corey and Dave Clark are perverts, man. Oh, gosh. Hey, what can you do? Our past is our past, and it is what it is. You know, I don't deny my past. No one should.
Right.
But anyway, thank you for coming on, and I'm just going to give a brief overview of who's coming up next, and we'll take it from there. Thank you, David.
You're welcome. Thanks, Jim.
So that was it. Our show is coming to a close, and I want to remind everybody that the debut show of Diversity Rules Magazine on the Air is next Wednesday, February 5th at 7 p.m. when I welcome Terry Ludwig. She is one of my monthly writers. She writes a column called Keep Up Now, and she is an awesome person. I love her to death, and we met years ago, and the individual that introduced us doesn't really talk to either of us anymore, but that's a fine thread that is in our lives that you have to respect. But that's next week, the debut show, and I hope you can make it and come and listen to Terry Ludwig and who else, and whatever else happens and is said, will be said. And have a good week, and take it easy, and love you all.
We hope you have enjoyed your brief sojourn here with Diversity Rules Magazine on the Air. We, alas, must part paths until next week, when we will begin a new journey into your mind and discuss compelling issues of the day, touching on diversity and acceptance. The world is a beautifully diverse place with many perspectives, and it is our hope you took away something from tonight's show that enhanced and strengthened your resolve to make the world a better place for all its inhabitants.